Shop early, save big, all month long during Black Friday Build-Up at Lowe's. Right now, get select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at just $59.98. Don't wait to save. Shop these deals today, in-store or online. Because Lowe's knows deals. Discount taken at time of purchase while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
All right, guys, welcome to the Everyday Warrior Podcast. Again, we got John Wellborn, just John. We're also joined by Ben Crookston, who is the founder and CEO of Train Heroic.
Former CEO,
yes.
Now he's just a serial entrepreneur and all-around college football player and generally good guy.
You played college ball?
I did, yeah.
Where?
University of San Diego, back when Jim Harbaugh was there.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Quarterback. And sorry, one thing with the mic is you got to speak directly into it. It's very directional. Okay, so USD. So all the rich girls.
Exactly.
University
was a spoiled daughter.
What years?
Up to 2005 to 9.
Yep. 2005 to 2009. Yep. Okay. Yeah. Damn, I was there in San Diego.
Coronado?
Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful place.
Oh, yeah, you can't beat it. It's still the only place I would move to in California. Yeah.
Really?
If I had to move to California.
The only place I would move to in California is Cambria.
Yeah, and let me take that back. Actually, where are you originally from?
Chicago, mostly.
And went to USD.
Yeah.
No kidding. Okay.
Yeah. It was a very simple decision. It was like my week before making that decision, I had an official visit to Brown. I went to Brown, Rhode Island, winter, December, snows 3 feet. I'm stuck on my official visit over for 3 nights, and I'm like, this is terrible. Kid from Chicago. You know, Chicago's basically, in the winter, is just crippling depression and gray skies. And then the next week, it's unusually, unseasonally warm in San Diego. That's where my visit is. Jim Harbaugh. Used to play for the Bears, comes and recruits a bunch of Chicago kids, knows all the good schools, brings us out, and it's 83 degrees on the beach in San Diego, and he's just walking us around the campus, and I'm just looking around, I'm like, this is a no-brainer.
Yeah,
this is exactly what it's about, and so we had a fantastic experience.
And for people, you know, why would you pass up on Ivy League? USD is sort of known as the Ivy League of the West Coast, isn't
it? That's exactly what Jim Harbaugh said.
Yeah. That's what I've heard that before. Yeah. The academics are not.
It's a great school. Open curriculum, you can, I had kind of like a lot of independent study, so I got to design a lot of my curriculum, which was as an entrepreneur.
USD, exactly not UCSD.
USD.
USD. Yeah.
UCSD is a great school, too.
Yeah, but not
medicine and...
No, not, what is it, San Diego State.
San Diego State, yeah. Different piece.
Well, that's where Turley and them went.
That's awesome. Great place. Yeah, no, I left in 2009, so. And finally, Norbert, you're from Germany, living in Clearwater, Florida.
Yes.
Okay, we were just talking about Nazis, not in a good way. But did you guys catch that Netflix?
The deal where Hitler was still alive living in Argentina?
No. So that was a good series. I think that was Amazon Prime.
But my God.
You've got to go watch this series on Netflix about, it's like Hitler and the Evil Empire, the Trials of Nuremberg.
And it's a Netflix?
Oh, it follows the rise of Hitler. And like again, it's just those fatal... egotistical mistakes where they would still be the European superpower if his ego didn't get in the way.
Well, it was meth. If you ever watched, they were big. I mean, they developed methamphetamine for those. So if you watch him during the Olympics, you see him tweaking out on meth. And I think there were some other issues.
You sent me that video.
I will. Yeah. And it shows him tweaking like, and he's sitting there rocking back and forth like a guy that's whacked on meth. And so, I mean, the paranoia, like, He's every meth head you ever come across, he's probably stealing copper in his spare time.
If he had just drinking coffee, he would have been fine.
Well, not everybody can be perfect.
And we're here. Norbert has dedicated his life to, it's safe to say, holistic medicine over 40 years.
Yes.
And you've just written a book called Coffee Addiction and Caffeine.
Ism.
The most widespread drugs in the world. I've got to ask point blank, do you have any death threats?
But the main title on the bottom... They've been printing, they twisted it. The main title I had in mind, Every Coffee Drinker is a Drug Addict.
Mm. I like that better. Yes. That would have been more clickbaitish. Yes. Yeah. Do you have any open death threats on you?
No, because I'm in hiding.
Ah. You're in hiding.
No. Operation Paperclip.
Yes, there we go.
Well, talk about Nazis. I have to get rid of one question, as I'm so pleased to run into this theme today unexpectedly. I have one question for you. As you know, Germany never had oil in the grounds, right? We didn't have oil wells, right? Explain to me how a country like Germany, for a minimum of 6 years, had the oil to feed the entire country and the war machine and the tanks and the guns and the airplanes. Where did the oil come from?
I'm going to make an educated guess and say the United States of America or Russia.
Well, dig back into Henry Ford.
Yeah.
And some of these major major individuals in this country were huge supporters of Hitler.
All right. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So with that thought, I'll leave you alone and the Nazi stories. And I'm happy that we had a good start here today.
Yeah. Yes, so are we. We're glad that you came out. Not so sure that you're going to be able to fly back today with the hurricane going on. I'm sure you're going to be delayed. Think
you have a bed, right? You have a guest bed.
Yes, I do. Yeah. And with that, I've got to give...
coffee.
I probably should have given this forewarning. If a woman barges through the door and says, we got to go, her due date was 2 days ago.
Oh.
So she's upstairs right now.
His wife's 9 months pregnant.
Thank you, man.
That's huge.
Look, I saw you post that picture the other day. She's...
Is this first?
Her first, my third. Okay. My third.
Yeah. Mike's going to be right back in the baby fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, John's going to have to pick up the podcast. And give me 3 months, man. All right. So first off, you're talking about probably one of the few joys in our life.
It's true.
Is to get up in the morning and have a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. And how dare you call us drug addicts? Mm-hmm. You want to rob that out of our lives?
No, my target would be for you to learn about it, and then you decide for yourself. And up front, every time, I did this in Germany, I just came back from Germany, I did 24 podcasts there. And what I say towards the end, let me say this at the beginning. I'm sure that basically most of people who listen now and are coffee drinkers will all say, I'm not a drug addict, I'm not addicted to coffee. And when we say coffee, we mean caffeine, okay? Because caffeine is nowadays in most of soda pops, energy drinks, Red Bull, whatever the name is, right? And in those drinks, the caffeine concentration is higher than in coffee. And on top of that, I can assume that the caffeine in those drinks is chemical. It's not natural caffeine like in coffee. You have a few plants which have natural caffeine where you can extract caffeine, but the work, the cost for the big companies would be too big to do that. So they created what I assume artificial chemical caffeine. So you're not drinking even normal natural caffeine, right? So I say what I usually say towards the end. Everyone who sits there now and listening and says, no, I'm not addicted, very simple. Very, very simple, which I explain in the book as well. Start from today to drink no coffee and no soda pops, etc., which have caffeine. Start today. And then wait how many hours, how many days you can withstand the addiction. My guess is that 95, 98, 99% cannot exceed 2-3 days. And I made tests in Europe when I brought this up before. And I offered people in my seminars, look, here's my email address. If you could go on a quest, send me an email and tell me honestly, how long did you survive without coffee or caffeine? Nobody ever sent me an email.
I did 30 days.
Okay, cool.
So I had a deal where I went to go see this. I'll give you a little backstory. My good friend, Doc Yu, we should have on the podcast. He's like a stem cell kind of expert, exosome guy. He went and met this guy that he called the guru. And this guy was doing these cleanses and the whole deal. And so he talks to me about it. I'm like, this is nonsense. He's like, meet this guy. So I'm like, great. I go meet him. And as I'm talking to the guy, I'm like, you're a charlatan. This is bullshit. And the guy's like, you're afraid. I'm like, give me your cleanse. I'll do it. So he had to take his supplements and do the special diet and do this whole thing. And he had like in a 30-day protocol. I signed in. There was zero coffee. I didn't drink coffee for 30 days. And that was the saddest 30 days of my life, not waking up with like a warm glass of or a cup of sunshine. And I did. I got to the end of his thing. None of what he said came true. And he's like, oh, you must have a good diet and have not have lied to me. At which point, there was I pretty much almost killed the poor guy. But like I did 30 days.
You're an exception. There's no question. You're an exception.
Yeah, no, I like I said, I don't have an addiction.
You are an exception.
Like I don't like for me, like drinking alcohol, like if you said I like don't drink it, like it doesn't really faze me.
Well, we were talking today as well about alternatives to coffee.
Yeah.
But let's dive into it and we'll get to this.
What's your background? I'm really fascinated on how you got here and more you got this. Like, what was your background? You grew up in Germany, obviously moved to the United States. Like, what's the whole catalyst for this? And like, what, like, give me some origin story on Norbert.
I'm surprised myself how I ended up here today. I don't have a background. I never went to college, never to university. Never studied English, just learned it on the road. Never studied French, just learned it on the road. For me, that has a lot to do with my previous lives, which I've seen. So I care. I care about people. I care about this planet. And I feel a responsibility. I feel a responsibility. These thoughts I have to follow them through, to prove it first to myself, my concept is right, and then offer it to people. Say, look, here's my findings. You agree with it or not, do with it whatever you want. And this is how I lived life, and this is how I succeeded. And I ended up having this company, which I never wanted to have. I never wanted to have a production company. I was on the verge of dying 40 years ago when I had an intense poisoning of wood treatment. I had an old farmhouse from the 17th century. And we treated the wood with some chemicals.
In Germany?
In Germany.
Okay.
Okay. And I had an enormous toxic load up in my body and a food intolerance on high grade. And until this day, I never needed a doctor. And I went to the Yellow Pages, and a certain name I just stopped and called the guy. And little did I know that 40 years ago, he was specialized in food intolerance 40 years ago, when hardly anybody ever talked about food intolerance. So I went to this guy, and he saved my butt, and I went to him for 1 year as an internship. Every weekday, including Saturday, his place was open, and we worked for 1 year every day except natural holidays and Sundays, for 1 year. First, we experimented on me as my guinea pig. I volunteered, and he was kind of blown away. He was already 75 at this time, that this young guy would say, look, bring it on, let's do it. I want to find out. And we found out a lot. And for 1 year, and I learned in this 1 year the basics of my work, which I do today. Every time you have a craving for something, you're addicted. A craving for something is a clear proof that you are addicted. And I don't care what people say. I don't give a shit. I saw it. And we tried it for 1 year with patients all the time.
Could it be that the craving is because they're missing something within the gut microbiome?
That could be the case, but it's still an addiction. So if you not, when you refer to unbalanced, that you have a, basically, I must say no. I hardly found this. Okay, and I understand the concept where you're coming from. You know, nobody has a craving in the morning for a salad, for an orange juice, which I tested with people over 20 years. Nobody can digest orange juice.
Yeah, I hate orange juice.
It's so healthy and vitamin C and all that shit.
When they pulp it, I mean, when they basically take all the fiber, all the good stuff out of it by liquefying the sugar.
But even if you take fresh orange juice or oranges, okay? I muscle test kinesiology people for 40 years.
Oh, so do you do applied kinesiology for the muscle testing?
Yeah, for 40 years. I started 40 years ago. Okay. And I proved to myself and to others, nobody can digest oranges. So what I do in my seminars, I take an apple and an orange, and I know the results. I test you on the apple, positive, good, eat apples. I test you on the orange, no, don't eat orange.
Why is that? Because of the genetic modification?
I don't know. And for me, I mean, you have thousands of products. If I consulted people, at the end of the day, as a life coach, we had two piles of food, one which are for good for you, one which are bad for you. And I started my life working on that the planet is based on frequencies only. And
yeah,
and how many million frequencies there are.
Yeah, it's the sun in residence. Okay. The idea that we're struck with there's 8,000 lightning strikes like a second, or you know, however it works, but like there's basically the lightning strikes create a resonance which almost makes like a life, like a pulsing heartbeat of the planet that gives off resonance and frequencies.
But we're drifting now far away. I'm afraid we don't get through my concept. I don't know how many hours you got. So I started 40 years ago to find out that there are only two types of frequencies in this world. Two categories, that's all. Pro-survival or counter-survival. Everything you do is pro-survival, counter-survival.
Fight or flight, some people refer to.
No, that's something else. Every relationship you have is counter-survival or pro-survival. Every food you eat is counter-survival or pro-survival. Any work you do is pro-survival for this planet or counter-survival. Everything is either pro-survival or counter-survival.
For yourself or for others?
For yourself and for others. If you live an egoistic life, you can say it's only for me, right? But in all my work is based on quantum physics. Quantum physics knows no you or me or yesterday or tomorrow, or, you know, that's egoistic thoughts which have no value in this society. Okay, so I went to this apprenticeship, and I made it my definition. What is addiction? We have to agree on a definition. My thesis I developed is a thesis of three P's. Three P's, letter P. You can be addicted to a product, to a procedure, or to a person. These are the three fields of being addicted, right?
What do you mean by procedure? Classify that for me.
Yeah, like a process, okay? I'll give you an example. A guy is addicted to go every Saturday night at a titty bar, okay? It's a procedure he does. You know, he wants to have that. He needs to have that for the addiction he wants to fulfill, right? Coffee drinking in the morning.
It's a process.
I need this the thing, you know, the machine, and then the hot drink, and then I sit down, you know. It's a process. And you can be addicted to processes, okay? You need that.
So habits, like a habit.
Yep.
Well, habit is something you personally do, right? Which you personally have. A process is something is running down in front of you, with you or without you.
So like Mike every morning gets up and does a cold plunge. That's your process.
Adopting that process.
I am. I've been doing it. I promised you I'd do it for 30 days.
Oh, and you're going to stop after 30 days?
Well, I'm going to make a decision. I don't want to be addicted to it. I don't want to have an addiction to ice cold water. What?
I said at which point it'll be a habit.
Yeah, that'll be a habit.
It was 30 days to create. I think it's like 14 consecutive days to create a habit.
Mm. Okay.
So as a life consultant, I worked a lot with alcoholics. Mm. And I saw the behavior patterns of alcoholics, and I compared it to the behavior patterns of coffee-addicted people, and they were very, very similar. I observed either one was jittery and moody when they didn't get the fix. You hear statements with drug people and with coffee people. I need a coffee in the morning, otherwise I cannot start the day.
I have heard that.
I need a coffee to get through this time. I'm totally tired, worn out. I need a coffee to survive.
Isn't that just fried adrenals? The people that are so overstimulated, their adrenals are fired, that they're basically using artificial stimulation to be able to get through?
I'm not going to put you off, but we're getting to the adrenals in a minute.
Okay.
Okay. So this is what I observed, and I applied it to coffee, and I was watching it. And I had to separate all these many advertisings and information and marketing strategies where a lot of caffeine-related companies were behind pushing these statements in newspapers and magazines. And then, of course, you have doctors and who are as well pushing it. And I developed my thesis that God has given us emergency programs. We have emergency programs basically people are not aware of. One emergency program is fever. Fever is an emergency program. Thirst. Thirst is an emergency program. It tells you got to drink now. If you don't drink, you will die. and reminds you and reminds you. If you would drink regularly, you would never develop the feeling of thirst, because you always replenish the body in time with the amount you need. Hunger is an emergency program. Pain is an emergency program. It tells you, look, something is going on here. You got to look into this. Number one, number two are emergency programs. If you don't listen, we all saw the consequences early in our life and some time. Sleep is an emergency program. I've been trying to pass by sleep and drive the car home middle of the night and fell asleep in the car while driving. I did this once, twice, and that was it. I learned my lesson. Scary. Because the body says, look, I don't give a damn you want to go home now to your family. I need sleep. Boom. It overruns your free will to stay awake. This emergency program, if it wouldn't happen, you would be in a catastrophe. And the last example of emergency program, which is the theme of today, is stress. Stress is an emergency program. And chronic stress is mental or physical, is for me the only cause for illness. There is no other cause for illness than mental or physical chronic stress. Story for another day. Now, we have adrenaline glands. They sit on top of the kidneys. I have here an image for you where you can see that, because people are not aware of the adrenaline glands. There's an image which shows what the glands look like and where they sit, right? And so you got the image there, okay? And the job of the adrenal glands is to produce the amount of adrenaline we all need in our healthy life. We need adrenaline in our healthy life. However, under stress, the production of adrenaline goes through the roof. This puts everyone in this unwanted sympathetic nerve system situation. Instead of living parasympathetic nerve system, which would be the healthy way of living, this adrenaline kick kicks in the unwanted sympathetic nerve system situation, or which is called fight or fly mode, right? And we have to go now back quickly 50,000 years to understand what happened. God has given us the emergency program. To my philosophy, stress is one of them. When you met 50,000 years a saber-toothed tiger, you were in the fear of death. Of course. In this situation, you had only two chances, to run away or to fight. In either case, you needed an enormous amount of power.
Hold on, sorry. I was thinking for the backdrop. Okay, sorry, gotcha. I'm
on. You needed an enormous amount of power. And to give that to you, God designed your stress emergency program. The adrenaline produces adrenaline through the wazoo in a volume incredible because of the fear of death. Now, you had two chances. Either you fought the tiger or you ran away. Okay, if you survived, cool. How often did that happen? We don't know. Maybe once a month, maybe once a half a year, whatever, we don't know. But not continuously every day 100 times, most likely not. So after a few hours, your adrenaline level came back to normal. Okay, good. What is important to understand, and the consequence later for caffeine drinkers, when the adrenaline gland takes over the emergency program, the body reduces or stops completely certain functions. Because all the energy had to go to just run or fight. The lungs pumping, the muscles, the eyes. What do I need to survive now? Do I need sex with my wife? The thought, the idea? No. Am I thirsty? No. Do I have hunger? No. Do I feel pain? You don't even feel pain in this situation. So the body says, all these functions, stop it or reduce it to a low level of unimportance. Because we need all the energy we can have for you to run and to fight. And this is important to understand. Now, what has it to do with coffee and caffeine? This mechanic we just explained, we cannot switch off. We cannot say, I don't want that. It's there all the time. And very little times, you guys did a lot of fighting out there in the world. a lot of times in a fighting, true fighting war world, this mechanic can help you to survive. But these are exceptions in our society nowadays. Caffeine mimics this fear of death. So caffeine stimulates the adrenaline like crazy, like being fear of death. A situation unhealthy for the body, we don't want. But it's there, we cannot switch it off. And caffeine does that, and that's the dangerous part of it. Not only that it stimulates that much, but it reduces other body functions, which have the consequences. A German associate of mine, or somebody I know in Germany, he has a cancer treatment center, a private one, very successful. And they discovered that the cancer patient had no more normal level of adrenaline anymore. Because the body being under stress because of cancer overproduces adrenaline for months, for years. The adrenaline gland is worn out. It doesn't produce any more adrenaline level. To my knowledge, so far, I haven't found anybody except this guy who has researched and proved that the cancer patient has no more adrenaline level to a normal survival, because we need it. And you cannot switch it on off. That's the problem. So I don't care if you drink coffee or not. I'm not a disciple. I'm not somebody who goes with a sword to this world and to convince people. I'm just giving you the data. Read my book. It's all explained in the book in details, more in details, okay? So when the COVID shutdown came and I couldn't deliver seminars, I decided to do a self-test with coffee. Because in this moment, in all my life, I never drank coffee. I always loved the smell of fresh grounded coffee. I loved it, okay? Loved it. I would buy a lollipop with this, but I'm not drinking it. So I said, okay, let me do a self-test. Because basically what I teach in my seminars, workshop, I have all experienced myself or with the person being next to me where I could really see what's going on. So I never wanted to talk from the ivory tower, and I'm not a saint, right? I said, okay, you're drinking coffee now for 4 weeks, 30 days to be precise, and every day one cup of coffee. All right. So I started in the morning, drove by, get my coffee, went on to work, drank the coffee the first few days.
Is this here in the U.S. or in Germany?
In the U.S.
In the U.S.
It was 2 years ago. Well, I lived in America for 25 years.
Okay. I was going to say the coffee in Germany is pretty stiff, so I don't know if maybe the watered-down stuff in Florida is a little bit different.
So at the beginning, the first few days was very unpleasant, the acidity and
kind of acidic.
Stomach too acidic, right? And so, but what you do for science, right? You fight through, right? So I fought through, and two, three times I made the incredible mistake to get that coffee on the way home in the afternoon and not in the morning when I drove to work. And when I got in the afternoon, my sleep was, in the nighttime, gone. Forget it. I couldn't go to sleep. I could not go to sleep. It was impossible, right? After 30 days, the time was over. Now, when I worked with alcoholics, for example, an alcoholic works the way when it rains, cats and dogs, the alcoholic says, oh, what a shitty weather. I got to drink something today, you know, to survive. Next day, the sun is shining bright and great, and he says, look, we got to celebrate the sun. We got to drink something, right? He has always a justification to drink. Now, I can tell you from the bottom of my heart, with every alcoholic I work, the very next day, they all swore to God, I will never ever drink again, and they believed it. And what I said before about addiction, you don't have a free will to say no. The free will in you is not as strong as the addiction. So after 30 days, I said, okay, today, last day, coffee. All right, let's see what happens, you know. And only one coffee a day, right? The 31st day, I said, one day more or less, what's the difference? So one more coffee today. The second day, come on, don't be so stiff. That's 2 days. It doesn't matter. 30 days, 32 days. And after 3 days, I realized I'm looking for the same stupid, misleading justifications to go on. And it took me 30 days to get off. And only one cup a day for 30 days. No, sorry, 2 months took me. 2 months to get off. 2 months, I still had this urge to drink it, right? And then I decided to write the book because I had no chance of giving seminars with the COVID lockdown. So I said, look, I owe these people. I always talk about it. So I did the self-test, was over, and I understood. Now, I have here a chart for you, which is called caffeine concentration. And here I show you how much caffeine there is in the different coffees, because there are a lot of misunderstandings, right? Or decaf coffee, right? Decaf coffee has no caffeine. No, it has caffeine. I show you there it has 10 to 40 milligrams of caffeine, the same like a cappuccino, the same like a latte macchiato. So I give you all these statistics because some people have complete misunderstanding how much caffeine is in which coffee. They just make it up.
Well, and a lot of people drink more sugar in their coffee. I mean, I always drink my coffee black. The way I describe my coffee is I usually like it like the color of Mike's soul. So real black. No sugar. But when I, you know, you stand behind somebody at like, let's say a coffee place, I mean, some of these coffee orders might have 300 grams of sugar in them. Like, I wonder if people are addicted to sugar more than the caffeine.
Are you talking like a Frappuccino here?
Oh, my God. I sit behind this lady who ordered a $25 drink from Starbucks. It had like 4,000 pumps of this and this and this whole thing. It came out to be like $24.99 and for all the stuff she added. And like there had to be 1,500, 1,800 calories. And like, you know, I mean, it was insane looking at this thing this woman was drinking. And I'm like, there's no caffeine in that that's overriding any of the sugar or what she has in there.
Well, as I said in my book as well, the title says on the cover that sugar and caffeine are the widest spread drugs in the world.
Do you think more people are addicted to sugar than caffeine?
Yes.
Yeah, sugar addiction, I think, is through the roof. I mean, yes. We see that all the time.
Well, it's not only that you'd crave for it, but don't forget that they put sugar in every little thing, whether it's meat or cold meats or this. When you say, why the hell do you put sugar in there, right? They know why they do it. So, because 99% of all products which are advertised and go through your mouth are all addictive. 99% of all products which are commercially advertised and go through your mouth are all addictive. Pharmaceutical products, alcohol, cigarettes, sweets, energy drinks.
Yeah, coffee. It's how they sell us stuff.
Yes.
It's called the like the renewable consumption model.
They're not stupid. They're spending $10 million in advertising. They get $100 million back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, look at energy drinks. I mean, we did a podcast with Allison Barger, who said that the largest problem that's plaguing the U.S. military is energy drinks. And these kids dying from, like, fatty liver, like kidney and liver transplants and having all these problems because they're drinking, you know, a case of energy drinks every single day.
If you wanted to see somebody lose their cool overseas, run out of, like, sugar-free Red Bulls. Or sugar-free rivets. I mean, there was mantrums. If you couldn't get your energy fix.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the same thing though. You'd get to ORP, which is the objective rally point, which is your last point of cover and concealment before you go assault a target. And, you know, you're trying to be quiet and I mean, hell, I had you know a pouch in. I was chewing caffeine gum. On those patrols, you're trying to get quick adrenaline.
Yeah.
You're trying to get that fix. And I get it, when your life's on the line, you can't. I think, here's the thing, too, is like, when you do it enough, like, when you, and I'm not saying that when you have so many firefights under your belt. Just,
it's just getting back.
Your adrenaline doesn't pump as much.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a little overconfidence there, but really quickly, before we move on, I want to get these guys' thoughts, because they're both in the health and fitness industry. How did you end up breaking the cycle at 60 days?
Well, first of all, I must say to drink just one cup a day for 30 days is a low level of addiction, right? Though I never drank coffee before in my life and never alcohol, so that was a very sensitive subject for me. A lot of will, okay, and discipline, and said, look, that I don't accept that this gets to me. So you have to convince yourself, like everybody who's in addiction, and I write about addiction in the book, And even if you're not a coffee drinker, I encourage you to read it. Or let's say if you're a coffee drinker, read it to find out what's going on with your body and which health consequences you have. Because we're coming soon to the health consequences.
Okay? Yeah, no, I'd love to get into what your thoughts are on the health consequences and the negative effects of drinking coffee.
What scientifically testing says. Okay, I'm too small of a guy. My thoughts are not so important. But
welcome to the table.
Connecting the dots is important. Right? So, as we said, caffeine concentration. Look, please, at page 27 in the book. The NASA did a test with spiders. And you see on the left side a normal spider web. Is it 27?
Yes, 27.
Okay. With a normal spider web, okay, on the left side. On the right side, after feeding the spider with caffeine, you see that the spider was not capable of spinning a regular spider web anymore.
Yeah, they've done that with heroin and all these other drugs too.
Caffeine.
That is.
When they gave the spiders LSD, the spider webs were even cooler.
That is amazing.
All right. So this is nothing, and the spiders don't watch CNN news. You know, they don't know anything about it, right? So they just do what they do. So this is an example of how caffeine screws with you. Now, the first point about health now, the major point about health consequences. I think we all agree that we live all too acidic. Our bodies are too acidic. And illnesses like cancer thrive on acidity. Okay? So when I have cancer people contacting me as a life coach, I'm not a doctor, I cannot give medical advice. I just ask them what you consume, what you do, what you want to do. So the first thing, no more coffee, no more acidic drinks. Full stop. Okay? One of the steps I'll take with these people. Advice. Now, I have here a statistic which shows you the regular scale of acidic, pH scale. There's a pH scale in the book which shows you what is a normal pH scale. And regularly it goes from 7 to 14. I took it a bit differently. I said it's 7 to 14, but the center is not, sorry, it's 0 to 14. The center is not 7, it's 7.5.
Well, that's what the pH of actually, like, good water is usually 7.5.
Well, I give it a bit of a fluctuation. I say good water is 7 to 8. Yeah. Okay, not being too stiff. But 7.5, why? Because your blood is 7.34. Yeah. And if you would try to force your blood on 6 or on 5 or on 8, you would die.
Yeah.
Okay, the blood must be 7.34. Now, you see there a next statistic who shows you from 7.5 down to 1.5. Now, if you drink water with 7.5 and I drink water with 6.5, there's one number. People say, okay, what the hell is one number? Not important.
Oh, no, it actually causes a negative effect in the gut. I mean, the water we're drinking, that machine is literally at 7.5 because they found that to be the most favorable for the microbiome.
So, but if I drink 6.5, it's just one number, right? But that number is a logarithmic scale. It's 10 times too acidic. You drink water with 7.5, I with 6.5. My water is 10 times too acidic. If the water is 5.5, it's 100 times too acidic. 4.5, 1,000 times too acidic. It goes down to, for example, 2.5. You drink liquid with 2.5, that's 100,000 times too acidic. And you say, who's so stupid to drink something 100,000 times too acidic? Well, everybody's so stupid who drinks Coke. Coke is 2.5, 2.3. So you're bombarding your body right from the get-go by just drinking a Coke or other similar drinks. And I've done here the statistic which shows you now coffee. Coffee ranges typically between 4.2 and 5.9, which means between 50 and 1,000 times too acidic. Now, if you drink one or two coffee a day, you cannot compensate this with anything else to bring back your pH level. Now, people say, okay, I drink two coffee and I drink 1 gallon of water and then I'm fine. No, it doesn't work that way. So the pH is the first big issue, and I've given you here a statistic to show in the book where it says about all these different coffees, how acidic they are, how acidic is mocha, how acidic is medium roast, and so on. And I give you the statistics there. How acidic are they? Now, you can say, I don't give a damn. I drink my coffee. That's fine. But don't complain if you get this or this illness or disease. I mean, why does nowadays every third person die of cancer and the number is getting worse?
Well, every adult male on this planet, or at least in the United States, is going to die of one of three things. You're either going to die of cancer, you're going to die of a heart attack, and the other one would be stroke. I mean, it's really, that's what kills 95% of all men.
So every third person.
Only increasing.
It's increasing.
It's societal.
Well, I mean, but if you get in like a sonic, look at the Finnish studies, you can get rid of like the stroke and the heart attack ones. Yeah. Really, cancers are the number one deal. But there's kind of a theory with cancer. There's metabolic dysfunction, which is like the mitochondria theory, or there's the somatotrin, which is like the genetic deal like we were talking about. It's usually a mix of both. Like you look at neuroblastoma, how does an eight-month-old baby get neuroblastoma? Like it happens in vitro, there's a genetic component, but then you also look at like, we were listening to all the 9/11 stuff about all the people that died of cancer after 9/11 because all of the fire retardant, all the chemicals and all the asbestos that got pushed on people. Like the amount of people that died as a result of being exposed to it is like insane within those stories. So, I mean, you can be exposed to something.
Who genetically in their families had very low instances of cancer in the past?
Well, I'm more extreme there. To my opinion, you cannot inherit any illness from your forefathers.
Well, let me finish,
Chris. Okay. Every illness you have, you developed on your own. What happens is, that's all my personal opinion, of course, that from your parents, from your family, you can be conditioned to certain illnesses, but you don't inherit cancer from your father or mother. Impossible. It's absolutely impossible.
So we have a cancer charity for neuroblastoma, and for the last 12 years, we've raised millions of dollars for neuroblastoma. The kids that get neuroblastoma are like 6 and 8 months old, and it starts in the nerve tissue. Usually it happens in vitro in the womb. Now, whether or not it's, you know, and there's a, you know, is it that the mother was exposed to something that's happening? Is it genetic? They feel that it's a combination of both, that there's a genetic predisposition towards it and then some form of exposure. I mean, because how does an 8-month-old, 6-month-old baby get cancer? Like, it's insane.
You see, my book, I talk about when does a person get conditioned for caffeine? When gets a person conditioned for caffeine? And nowadays, in most cases, in the womb of the mother. Because the mother drinks Coca-Cola, pops, coffee, and all this runs through the baby. So the baby gets hooked as an unborn already with caffeine.
So pregnant mothers are drinking soda and I mean, yeah, I would. I don't know why that my wife didn't do that, but my wife's
that's
also.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk
different
about
human being.
Let's talk about the general population.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're in ivory towers.
So the baby gets used to caffeine already at that stage, and then as a 2-3-year-old, what does it eat and drink? French fries and a Coke. Very easily. So it continues the path, right? But about this inheriting disease or not, maybe some other day. I work a lot with, one of my major themes is protection from electromagnetic radiation, and that this world is based on frequencies only. And we get into this, and I have some stories and something to contribute. So back to the coffee. Coffee is 100 to 1,000 times too acidic. You cannot compensate that with good water, which is 7 to 8. No, we can't. And I have here a statistic on page 82, which shows the dependency potential of psychoactive drugs. And caffeine is in the middle field of dependency products, higher than LSD, slightly lower than alcohol. Page 82. In a quiet moment when you're on the airplane, got nothing better to do, look into this.
Lower than LSD, psilocybin.
Higher than LSD. Okay. This is not stuff I'm making up, of course, gentlemen. I'm not drawing these boards. In my book, I give all the quotes, all the sources of my information for you to look into.
That's interesting on marijuana. You would think...
I think marijuana is highly addictive.
So do I. It's interesting where you have it.
Do you think marijuana is highly addictive? No, I know you don't.
You don't?
No.
Do I think it's highly addictive? No, I don't. I mean, if you're looking at this spectrum here.
Do you think marijuana is more addictive than coffee?
According to this, no. No, I don't.
But let's, gentlemen, go back to from the bird's eye view. You cannot be a big pregnant. Either it's addictive or not. higher or lower. This is interesting for me, but it's not key, you know. By saying, okay, caffeine is lower than heroin. No, it's just that they all get you in dependency to a more or less degree. And then again, depends on your body condition. You may be more receptive or not.
Well, I mean, I don't know any stories.
The strength of the craving you're feeling? Because to your point, like, the basis of this is you're feeling an unmet need. There's an unmet need that coffee is solving for you around, say, fatigue. I mean, there's the ritual aspect of, like, I wake up, I smell the thing, you know.
I think you just hit it. And so I forget who I was listening to. They said coffee in the morning is more ritualistic. Than actually the benefits of caffeine that it gives you.
And that's right. Like, I think maybe coming back to that chart, you look at maybe the craving and then the outcome delivery of, say, the substance. The craving is very strong for a lot of people of, I'm waking up fatigued, I'm waking up in a place that's lower than the desired energy, and then the return profile of the product is very strong with not a ton of immediate downside. You're not like, oh, I feel terrible.
Yeah.
Like, to the point about, say, marijuana, it's like the outcome delivery for that product is probably highly variable and not necessarily always desirable for most people.
Yeah.
And so the addictive nature of it is, like, number one, is the craving as strong? I don't necessarily think it is for most people. It's,
man,
I don't think there's always a thing that needs to be done.
I played with a guy who would drive to my house in the morning, pick me up, and I would drive his car so he could smoke in the car. Because he...
And I've seen this as well.
Yeah, he was like, if he could not smoke...
You live in Boulder.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, I've seen it. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, when you're looking for a comparative analysis, if you look across the landscape population-wise, you're like, it's nowhere near as widespread, or the frequency is not nearly as high.
Well, I mean,
so the reach and
nobody
the,
really has a story of their dad or mom coming home beating the shit out of them because they didn't drink, you know, because they're missing their coffee or their marijuana, but there's a lot of stories like that for alcohol.
Yeah.
You know, you hear these abuse stories. I mean, I'm fascinated in this country that alcohol is so readily available and so easily accessed
and accepted.
And accepted.
And accepted.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, other things aren't. I mean, but I like it's it's considered norm. Like, hey, you want a cup of coffee? Let's grab a coffee, right? Like in the morning. But if you were to say that to somebody, hey, let's go to the bar at 8 a.m. and get a beer, people would be like, what are you, an alcoholic?
Yes, sure.
You know,
the acceptance for sugar, the social acceptance of sugar. Yes, or caffeine is no limitations, right?
And the downsides are massive. Yeah.
Now, now I hit you with harder facts now, okay? Health, you wanted to have the health. Swiss researchers found that regular coffee consumption in healthy young people reduces in only 10 days the gray matter of the brain. And all what I'm saying, I have the references in the book, the original sources, for you to read the entire study. In 2021, the University of Southern Australia did a coffee test with 17,703 participants. That's a big group. All age ranges between 30s and the 70s. They clearly result showed high coffee consumption is associated with reduced brain volume and an increased risk of dementia. So which means this test applies consequently for all caffeine-related products. These are heavy studies.
I would kick holes in that study.
Okay.
My only thing would be like, are with 17,000 people, how are you controlling what caffeine they are? What are the amounts? What else is in there?
I cannot comment this because I have the study. You can
I'll go back and look at it.
Go on my website, dive into it. These are just some highlights to get some ideas. You may not know that the Olympic Committee had banned caffeine.
Yeah, I do know that.
From 1984 to 2004, for 20 years. And on a Monday morning in 2004, the committee suddenly said, oh, you know what? It is not a doping. Let's take it off the list.
Brought to you by Folgers.
Starbucks, which is terrible coffee.
So through that lens, though, isn't that implying that it's a performance-enhancing benefit?
Of course.
The gray matter went down in their ability to actually
function. Yeah, but there's a difference between the body functions, the muscles, and the brain, right? These are not contradictive. They're additional findings, okay? For me, it is a corrupt situation that after 20 years, to me, the pressure of the industry in these years, 2004, think back, there's 20 years, all these energy drinks came up.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the NFL. I mean, they still test guys for marijuana, but yet they give people painkillers.
Yeah.
You know, the Brett Favre just came out and, you know, with Parkinson's. But what he didn't talk about, he talked about the hits, he didn't talk about his pill addiction. You know, heavy, heavy pill addiction to the point of, like, legendary opiate pill addiction. And so, you know, that's accepted. Whereas if given the opportunity, I would much rather give somebody a, you know, hit of THC as a painkiller than give them some opiate that we know destroys the lining in the brain. So, I mean, it's kind of interesting in this country. Wherever the money comes from is okay, like alcohol. I mean, the alcohol thing.
That's capitalism.
Yeah.
It gives you accessibility and ultimately free will of choice. But, I mean, what's the alternative to that? And we see prohibition. People are going to – it creates a black market.
People are going to find it. Always going to do what they want. Yeah. I mean, like, look at, like, the Mexican drug cartels, which is an interesting one to me. $13 billion industry. They're not selling that in Mexico. They're shipping it across the border. We are providing. So all this problem with, you know, cartels and violence and all of this is happening because the cartels are shipping their product here and we are consuming. People in Mexico aren't consuming this stuff.
Supply and demand. As long as there's that high of a demand in the United States, which we're fueling it. Yeah, no, the cartels should be wiped off the face of the earth. That should be.
But they would be if people stopped taking their drugs.
100%. 100%.
So, like, all these problems are because, I mean, they're filling a bucket because the people want that. And, whenever you see Fox News and they're talking about, you know, the cartels and the border and this whole thing, I'm like, that exists because of our addiction.
Sure.
To include the sex trafficking.
Yeah. Oh, the sex trafficking thing. I mean, like, all of these is because there's a fucking people that should be bottom of the wood chipper.
I think that's like. Point. Sean Puffy, P. Diddy.
Put him in a fucking.
A lot of people are suffering that then have unmet needs that then leads to addiction.
That's coping.
It's coping. They're coping mechanisms. We have a society that's hurting globally where people don't necessarily, like, we're implying every person has the ability to make choice and have discipline. But those things are actually skills trained over time, and we're only as good as the systems and environments that we're produced within.
So, Ben, is that a decline in mental toughness?
I do not think it's mental toughness.
No.
No, I do not, because I think, again, mental toughness is it's a skill. It's a muscle, right? Like, in special operations, they're cultivating mental toughness by putting you in an environment of stress, then pulling you away from the environment of stress.
Rest and reflection.
Rest and reflection, right? We're talking about the same thing. When you're talking about stress, is it good or bad? Stress is neither good nor bad. Stress is stress. It's actually a necessary thing to foster growth. Right. If you look at through a training lens, it's like in the absence of progressive overload, more stress on a system, you will not grow. Now, too much stress, inappropriately applied, will either break you down or lead you to illness or injury. Now, insufficient stress will decrease your ability to grow and lead you to a place of boredom and an absence of productivity. And so I think, like, in all these things we put in this, especially, say, on the internet, it's easy to put things in polarities, and it's like, is it this or is it this? Which camp are you in? It's like, it's neither.
Say it.
Well, but, pick a side. But, it's like there's
but
no
I mean,
side here.
That's how the Andy Frisellas and all these guys have these podcasts. It's easier to say. It's so definitive, and I have it figured out, and I'm the one.
But it just shames people. It puts people in a position of, honestly, like, weakness. And it's like, there's a low utility from that belief set. Whereas we have to look at it as these are rich and complex systems. And what are all the different pieces that are at play, one of which could be mental training. It's not always toughness, per se, but the ability to reframe, put yourself in a position of power, take ownership of your circumstance, make choice that's productive. That's definitely a thing that needs to be cultivated and trained over time. Now, the other thing is, we make it too damn easy. I used to teach in the low-income cities of Chicago. So I was a low-income teacher, inner city of Chicago. I was in the worst school in Illinois, ended up getting shut down. Now, were those students... set up to succeed? Absolutely not. Right? We went to breakfast. Breakfast was served, first meal. All the kids came in. We had 30% homelessness. Kids don't have access to food. They don't have access to shelter. Okay, what's at the table? A thing of juice that had 45 grams of sugar, and then a Danish. Okay, that's your rocket fuel to now be a high-performance individual to get out of a challenging situation in your life. The number one thing that follows this, right? You're going to have a spike of sugar. Okay, blood glucose goes out the moon. You're going to then be immediately dumped off. And then you're not able to focus. Then what's going to follow that is frustration, fatigue, and the ability to then engage in unproductive behavior. That could be unproductive in class. Could be I can't focus on my work. Whatever that thing is. And so I think it's like highly reductive to point at the people as the issue versus what is the environment, the system.
So you just hit it in environmentals.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's not nature versus nurture.
It's both. It's both.
To a degree.
We set people up for success. Then we train those people within the environment. And all of those factors collectively allow people to make progress in their life.
Yeah.
The people have to take ownership and be participant in their progress. And the environment has to support the progress.
And I will now decline myself from this podcast moving forward. Ben is the new co-host. John, good luck. He's a deep thinker. Interesting, though, I want to go back to a comment you said, because, and this is totally non-empirical, observational. I'm interested in the data because it's, you know, was Colorado the first state to approve or legalize marijuana?
Yes. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was. I think California followed too. So arrive in Denver at... It had to be like 10:30. So I'm staying downtown. There's a CVS close. So I'm sick. So I want to go get some meds. And having lived in Colorado for about a year and a half, like, it was a complete freaking nightmare. And I'm in the CVS, and there's a cop in the CVS. And the guy in front of me has tinfoil. And the cop comes up and said, "Hey, what's the tinfoil for?" And he's like, "Drugs, man. I'm about to cook up." He's like, "Well," cop's like, "at least you're being honest. Just please be as safe as possible." And I looked at the cop and I'm like, "Bro, what happened to Denver?" And he's like, "Marijuana." And what he said is what they've seen is the incline in one drug-related deaths that marijuana was leading to actually stronger addictions, like, you know, crack. The gateway drug. It's still too early to see the implications, but as this data comes out, I'm not for legalizing
this conversation. You know, my brother's a criminal defense attorney. He said every drug related crime he's ever dealt with, and anybody that he's had that was, you know, a drug addict that had done something, in every part of the origin story, their first stop on the bus of drug addiction, everything, is marijuana. He's like, "I've never seen anybody, you know, that, let's say, you know, heroin, drug, you know, like shootings and this, any violent crimes, any of the stuff he's done." He goes, "Whenever he starts talking, I'm like, how'd you get here?" "Well, when I was 13, I smoked weed. I mean, he represented a kid who was a number one pick baseball player who had started smoking marijuana when he was pretty young, came home, killed his dad with a baseball bat, and like the TV repair guy. And as he sat in there, and he had a ton of psychosis and like the mental instability, when they went in there, he's like, you know, there was a something chemically within his brain where he smoked marijuana young and completely altered his perception. And now he became bipolar and became a double homicide killer. And my brother's like, marijuana was the trigger for his initial piece. So he's like, I'm not saying marijuana is bad, because there's a lot of people that are normal people that smoke and never have any issue. But he had never come across somebody that hadn't, like, on the violent side, on these like far reaching out of the spectrum type of things, where marijuana wasn't their first exposure. He's like, not everybody goes that way, but he's like, there's nobody that's like, "Hey, I had never done drugs before. I started with heroin, and next thing you know, I'm robbing a dude at gunpoint." So, just kind of an interesting observation.
On that note, are you watching this Aaron Hernandez series?
Oh, he was. I'm not, but I do know enough history on him and know people that played with him. That dude was a crazy person long before he got to the NFL.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of childhood trauma there.
Do they get into the stuff at Miami and all that?
I think that's maybe the thing, though, right? Because it's like
environment.
Well, I think there's probably some correlation there, but you go like, "Hey, here's a person who's doing that at 13." And you go, "Okay, but what else was there?"
Oh, I'm not saying there was
a deep unmet need. There was an environment that supported that. There was a bunch of things that led to it. And then, to your point, there's probably a contrast example of somebody who maybe uses that in a targeted manner when they're like a different stage of life. And you're like, "Yep, wildly different things."
Yes.
So is it causal or is it correlated? I'm like, that's correlated insofar as.
You also have to remember the people that my brother is dealing with, that like the end of the spectrum.
Yeah, totally.
It's just an interesting observation he met. And he goes, but I've met a lot of people that like, you know, recreationally do
came
this.
Came from tough places that then did tough things.
Yeah, yeah. That never had any of these issues.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So he's, you know, and like he's, so.
It's a coping mechanism. I think it's important.
There's also some pretty interesting research that talks about the age at which you first start doing it.
Yeah.
So after the age of, like, once you're in your 20s and your brain is effectively hardened and your body is no longer this, opposed from your more formidable years. So the kids that smoke marijuana early, like 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, the effect on them is dramatically different than at age 25 or, you know, 30. Like, if you look at Joe Rogan, he guy didn't start smoking marijuana until he was, like, in his late 20s, early 30s.
Runs the biggest podcast on the planet.
And he runs the biggest podcast, and he talks about how great it is. But he even says, I didn't do this as a kid. I did this as an adult after I'd already had all my personality set.
Yeah. But for Norbert's sake,
like, I
this is about coffee.
This is Norbert. I didn't start drinking. This is interesting. I did not drink coffee until I retired from the NFL. So I didn't drink coffee until I was in my 30s.
Interesting.
And the reason being is I always thought it was weird that people would, like, wake up and be like, oh, I'm so tired. They drink this cup of coffee. I wanted to, like, wake up. And if I was tired, I wanted to do something, whether it was like exercise, like I just didn't want to artificially be like masking tired. But I didn't have kids. I didn't have a wife, and played in the NFL. When I retired from the NFL and I started, entrepreneurship and all this other stuff, I actually lived, do you remember I lived in that industrial loft? Mm-hmm. Right in back of that was Alta Coffee Shop. And so I used to get up, we would train at 6 a.m, people would come to work out with us, and I would walk over to Alta, and I was like, just give me a coffee. And they gave me a coffee, I didn't like it, and I was like, give me something else. And she gave me an Americano, which was an espresso with hot water, and I was like, this is much better. I'm an espresso with some hot water guy.
Yeah.
And I would walk over and get the coffee, but I think I was 32 when I started drinking coffee. So I didn't drink it
at all. It was almost like sushi. I didn't eat sushi as a teenager because it just wasn't appetizing to me. I worked at Starbucks for 2.5 years, and I didn't drink coffee. Yeah. You had to go through a training program where, like, the differences between the beans and the continents. I'm like, God, this stuff is awful.
Yeah,
but worked in the Starbucks environment. Coffee. Never drank. What's up?
So that was Starbucks coffee.
And pleasure.
It's the worst. Your mouth was burnt.
It was.
I hate Starbucks.
Norbert, you touched on the brain, gray matter. Mm-hmm. Are there any other long term effects? Well, cardiac.
Well, you see. What, in my medical understanding, the same product does not the same effect on every single person. Every person has his individual weakest link. And whatever your weakest link is most likely where everything negative will hit you, because you can't compensate. The problem is, which I observed as well, here's my graphic about what I think about MDs. To my opinion, 95% of all MDs are a disgrace. They are not...
You're talking about medical doctors.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're not treating... they're trying to treat reactions of the body.
Symptoms.
Symptoms, but not the cause.
Well, it's pharmacology. They're I mean, it's midstream pills. Yeah.
And they're not treating a patient, a person. And they don't think holistic. And this is why the failure rate is so big. I met about 3% good doctors and 2% top doctors. And I have a separate show where I talk about the difference between the regular doctor and the top doctor. So 2% of the doctors are fantastic, and I had the pleasure to work with many of them, as many as could find and came across my life, and who were willing to share the knowledge. So the consequences, we just gave a brief outlook here, and again in the book I go more intense in everything, you know. But what happened as well, you must understand, when I said the dependencies can be procedure, process, right? Coffee, meanwhile, is a procedure. All these different, I have an image here of all these different type of coffees we have now, which they came up with. It's not a simple coffee cup with a coffee. It's all these frappes and espressos and cappuccinos, Americano, cafe latte, risotto, cafe mocha. And around this, they built, I have an image here, with art and design. So it's the coffee and the cake with it. It's the coffee where you have these artificial designs with cream, you know, which I give you examples here. Or this freaky coffee shop I found here. Coffee is more than just having a coffee. And here's my ultimate AI image of our society about the coffee drinkers. We are meanwhile in a situation where coffee is like it used to be smoking. When I came to America, I tried to catch up with the history in America, and I watched all the Dick Cavett shows I could get my hands on to see who's who in America, to get an understanding. And so many people on these shows were drinking and were smoking cigarettes.
Yeah.
And it was normal. I mean, it was normal. It was a part of our life, a part of our society, everywhere. It was just normal, right?
Yeah. No, when I was a little kid, we used to, one of my friend's moms that drove our carpool would pick us up, and she'd have a cigarette on her lip, and we would all pile in, and she'd drive. Thank God she drove with the window down.
Sure. Sure. But like, so coffee became a culture, and they built the business nicely around it to support it as an important thing of our, a column on our society, right? And cigarettes failed. We know why. We know the history, blah, blah, blah. But coffee will not fail. I don't want to turn any company into bankruptcy in manufacturing coffee and caffeine. I wish they would shut down. They wouldn't do it. And they would move away from putting out these druggy products, okay? Because what happens is, when you said energy in the morning, right? If you don't have energy in the morning when you wake up, you did something wrong. You had 8 hours of sleep. You should have, and I have one show which is called The 17 Causes of Bad Sleep, right? Where I list the 17 causes I found for bad sleep. So, but when you wake up in the morning after your body is supposed and your mind to be reset, ready for the day, then you did something wrong the day before, okay? And if you drank coffee the day before, well, here's a reason why, at least one of the reasons why. So, and people ask me, what should I do? Well, first of all, do you drink healthy water? No. The majority of this population in this country, like in all the countries, drink bad, poor water, which is one of them, reverse osmosis water, which is bullshit. And I explain in one show why it is bad water, right? And in one show, I explain what are the criteria for good water. So people don't know what the criteria for good water are, and I drink bad water. So if I drink bad water, if I have exposure to electromagnetic radiation 24/7, if my food is questionable, if my mental stability and the trust in me as a spiritual being are not existing, so what do I base on my life, my strength? Where is it supposed to come from? Food, water, okay, good air, mental stability, protection from electromagnetic radiation, and this is going on 24/7. And if I don't have that, I don't have no energy. And sunshine, natural light, okay? We don't have enough natural light. So the alternative for coffee. In my book, I have a substantial amount of pages where I quote natural coffees, okay, which don't have caffeine. And again, caffeine-free coffee is no alternative, as a cacao is no alternative. I write in my book about why cacao is bad for you, right? So I came across a plant called lupine, and the lupine coffee seems to be the best alternative. What I learned when I came up with the book in Germany first, a dominant talk show host was the first one who had me on the show. And he said, look, I have a problem, I want to stop. But as a coffee drinker, I need a coffee kind of drink in the morning. The procedure.
Something what about warm. Something like tea?
Well, black tea has caffeine. Yeah. Green tea has caffeine. White tea has caffeine. Of course, herbal teas are all fine, right?
Yeah, but I mean, like green tea is directly...
Caffeine.
I know, but it's like green tea's, you know, whenever you see it, it's like a healthy thing. Like people drink green tea. It's
if you find in heroin vitamin C, it doesn't make it healthy, does it?
What, heroin and vitamin C? I don't know. Do they put heroin in vitamin C?
I'm saying, if you have vitamin C in heroin...
You're saying the presence of a positive substance in a negative environment is not necessarily a positive substance. Yeah.
Yeah. So these have all green tea, white tea, black tea. They have all caffeine. Okay. So this talk show host, very prominent guy in Germany, said, Norbert, I'm all with you. I want to stop today. I said, okay, but I need a substitute. I need... something
for the ritual.
For the ritual, and along with, let's say, a croissant in the morning for breakfast or so, I need something warm, right? I said, I understand. And I came up with this Lupine Cafe, which I quote in my book as the supposedly best alternative. And this talk show host, when I came back a year later, he said to me, I have a funny story, and I quote it, I think, in the book. I had people who wanted a coffee. I gave them the Lupine coffee, that did not realize it wasn't real coffee. That he figured is so close to coffee and as a replacement, which makes it easier for people who want to leave coffee to have a replacement for the taste, for the, you know, procedure. It's lupine coffee. I explained in the book. Now, bottom line for me is caffeine is for me a drug, full stop. That's factual for me. Problem is there's no public education. Nobody wants to explain the public the consequence of caffeine. FDA, they have no interest. Government has no interest. Coffee and caffeine industry, they have no interest. Soda pop industry has no interest. So nobody has an interest to make it public and make it known and teach it in school. Like so many subjects are not taught in school where they belong to as a basic of life. How do I live life if I don't have a proper communication, if I cannot build trust and I'm not honest? So many things, what I call the basics of life. My opinion is if you drink caffeine, you put your body always in a continuous stress. Continuous stress means chronic stress, and that's the problem. It doesn't come down. It doesn't come down. The chronic stress level is permanently up. It never comes down. If you have, of course, we have stress in our life, but this is the situation, oh, I'm too late for this football game, right? But that goes away, right? And stress is, besides these physical elements, stress is primarily a question of your mindset, what you put importance to. As soon as you put importance to a subject or title, the higher you put the importance, the more you get stressed out. We are both together in the car, right? He wants to take me to a football game. And I've never been to a football game in my life. So I said, okay, I come along. So now we're 20 minutes late. And he goes, example, shit, we're 20 minutes late. I wanted to be there at the beginning. He puts so much importance in this that he puts himself under stress. I sit on the next seat and I say, well, the hell, I come 20 minutes earlier or later. It's going to be fine, right? Most of the stress we have, we put on ourselves by our attitude towards what's going on. Does it bother you or not? Interesting enough, all people I met, all people who got off cancer, I saw a complete change of mind of importance in life. Complete change of mind of importance. Because they faced death and they got off it and they said, look, I'm not going to kill myself over this issue. No, it's not important. So caffeine is against nature. It's not God-given. Caffeine has never been in our lives until about the 15th century. And at this time, it was only a drink for aristocrats, rich people, a small selective group. The average person had no coffee until the 19th century, where it was cost-wise available. It's an abuse of society in certain areas of the world, of coffee farmers who are abused by the big companies. It's all in all your decision, which I say here, you want to live stressed or relaxed. And I have what I call my famous gravestone in my book and in my presentation. It says, rest in peace. Mankind is extinct. It's at the end of the book. Mankind is extinct.
Because page 28.
Which says?
Page 28. This 20? One.
Okay.
Yeah, 28.
Mankind is extinct because they believe that the laws of nature did not apply to them. We don't live with nature. We live against nature. And we have all kinds of excuse why we live against nature.
But isn't caffeine naturally occurring in plants?
Yes. But like poppy seeds are naturally occurring in plants, right? But it was then cultivated in quantities in areas where it did not exist and farmed to supply and demand, right?
Yeah, well, what was it? Like yohimbe bark that people used to chew? You know, like there's different plants that like indigenous people would chew and consume that had similar effects to like caffeine and yohimbe and that. Yeah.
So... The justification that it exists in nature does not mean it's healthy. You have a nature fungus.
Yeah, well,
beautiful to eat.
Snake venom and dog shit are natural, and I'm not eating those either.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying there are indigenous cultures for a long time, like in the Amazon, that have used and cultivated certain products like Yohimbe and that.
Yeah. Of course. But then again, the question of distribution and of infiltrating it with teenagers and young people and so on and so forth.
Oh, and then also increasing like the dosages. I mean, it's like one of the interesting things that on the marijuana side is like when people were growing it, let's say in their backyard in a natural field, opposed from these incredible like hydroponics where now it's hundreds of times and different strains in this. I mean, it's gone from like the recreational to all of a sudden I'm in Mars.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like maybe with all this stuff, it's like the devil's in the dose.
Yeah.
Right. Like there's not a substance on earth that if you don't overdo it, it's not a problem.
Even water. You can overdrink water and die.
You can overdrink water.
Well, the water we're drinking today in our society is so bad that we easily die anyway.
Even if it was good water. Like you can totally have too much water.
Yeah, but when you have good water, which one of my subject is, if you have good water, pristine water quality, you drink what your body needs.
Sure.
Okay. You're not like going on because there's no addiction to it.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So bottom line is for me, if you need more energy, sleep. My message is it's not caffeine.
Yeah.
You're on a dead end street.
Right.
There's no end to it. If you don't have the minerals, true vitamins, because most of the vitamins sold in the store are bullshit. They're not true vitamins, right?
Of course.
And if you don't have enough sleep, if you don't have good, healthy water and food, if you don't have love for yourself and others in your life, if you don't have enough sunshine, this is where you get energy from.
Yep.
Okay. And we got it for 50,000 years. But now we think we can replace it with caffeine. No, it doesn't work. On my website, you'll find many seminars, webinars, talk shows about this and other themes. My book is $16.50, $4 shipping out of Florida.
So they can't find it on Amazon?
They're trying to list it now.
Okay.
This book came out in Germany first because I write all my material in German. And after I translate it, so in Germany it's out. In the America just was released, I think 4 weeks ago. We want to bring it on Amazon, but I don't know what my people are doing.
So where do they go? What's the website to find the book?
Improveyourlife.us.
Improveyourlife.us.
That's my message.
Okay, and we'll post that in the copyright. Of this
so that's podcast. My introduction. It's the introduction. Everything is a book much more deeper explained. Any questions for now?
Last comments?
You're overwhelmed?
I'm energized.
And you had coffee.
And I had coffee. Correlation causation.
John, you gonna stop drinking coffee?
No. I if one of the health markers that I have and I get my blood worked on and the gut stuff and I'm pretty dialed on all this, if something led me to believe that this was a negative effect upon me, I'd probably make a U-turn or a change. But, you know, I mean, what I've seen, like, you know, within the markers of the gut, like bifidobacteria, lactobacillus, and like, you know, some of the stuff, you know, in terms of gut diversity, I mean, gut diversity is a huge issue. You know, so I was pretty high in that. Like I was a, you know, basically low level Hadza at that point. So we've done a lot of stuff to be able to like have like a healthy gut biome and a microbiome. But, you know, one of the big issues, and I was talking to Ben about this, the microbiome lives in the soil. So like we have a symbiotic relationship with the earth and like the bugs that are in the soil, the bugs in our gut. And we've effectively stripped all of the soil with, you know, glycophosphate and all these different things that the soil is no longer healthy. So then we wonder why our guts aren't healthy and, like, you know, this idea that we live in this kind of vacuum here and yet we don't, you know, like the, you know, the hippie grounding stuff or swimming within running water. I mean, all that, like, you know, he was talking about, like, the, you know, PEMF and the, like, the recharging of cells. I mean, I know it's some, like, hippy-dippy bullshit, but, like, it's a real deal.
I think people, like living in accordance with nature. That was one of Seneca's most popular quotes.
I agree with you 100%.
Fundamentally, whether it's our own personal nature within our identity, but also just like actually.
But in that's become the like world. Hippie stuff.
It's hippie
and I stuff. Buy into it 100%. Yeah. And so I like whenever I talk to people about it, they kind of roll their eyes. I'm like, that's how we've lived. I mean, he said 50,000. I believe we've been here a lot longer than 50,000 years.
Well, I just took this. I take this as a number.
Yeah, no.
No, I mean, I think it's a great point though, and. The reality is, it's like what is now mainstream.
We've only lived like this for the last 100 years.
Effectively assumed to be what is the commercial environment.
Yeah,
and so it's like our perception of reality is informed by the images that we're watching on a daily basis, the information that we're consuming, all of which has to have some incentive behind it. To Norbert's point, like, you can't sell sunshine, you can't sell air. Like, these things that are inherently good for us that are absolutely free, we can just go have health.
Yeah.
We can go move our body, go for walks, jump, run.
You can go walk money. Barefoot like you did
you
today.
You can go walk barefoot
and
today.
Like the grounding from that, what is it, the Shinaman residence or whatever, where the earth is struck with electricity. I mean, that's how we recharge is within that piece. And like, you know, people talk about grounding, like, oh, it's hippie stuff. I'm like, no, it's real.
It's real.
There's electricity in the ground that like resonates us.
Well, there's electricity in our body.
Yeah.
We have a natural magnetic electric field in our body, which is about 80 microwatts per square meter.
If the earth stopped being struck by lightning, if it all stopped, we'd all be dead in 4 minutes is the theory. That's how, like, we are constantly recharged, like, batteries. I mean, that's the whole premise of the Matrix, right? The humans are battery. I mean, that's a real deal, which makes me nervous on AI that we're going to end up in the Matrix. But
you know, we talk about obesity and the rise of obesity, especially in the era of the fast food industry. I mean, it just, I think humans, as you said it, moderation is key. I think that's the key to this, is we tend to go overboard.
Yeah,
I do feel, while obesity rates may be going up, it's the other portion of the population that's really starting to become a little more holistic. Mm-hmm. You know, go walk at least 30 minutes and get sunshine, vitamin D, natural vitamin D. Go walk barefooted, ground yourself. I do think that the obesity rates will eventually start coming down as we become more educated. There's more knowledge transfer. I do think it will reverse. I think we're in the infancy.
I wish you were
so
right.
So here's a question for you. So that implies that the gap is information.
I knew you were going to say this.
Well,
am I about to get slammed here?
No, I'm just saying. This is something we talk about all the time.
It's an interesting thing because we live in information ubiquity now. There's information that's free that's everywhere. There's not a lack of access.
Which information is offered to the people? In which form?
Totally.
I agree with that.
Right. But we live in an information-rich environment. You have to certainly have filtration so you can find the signal through the noise. But then it's like, is it that people don't always know? Because this is something we've seen all the time.
Yeah.
It is less and less common with each passing year that people don't know what is healthful. It's less and less common that people don't know that going outside and drinking water and eating nutritious food is important to them. That's less and less common. The ability to make good behaviors consistently still is a high risk issue.
But we have high level of misinformation and wrong information, manipulative information.
Yeah.
There are some prominent doctor, I don't quote the names, who are doing good jobs and on the internet all over. And these doctors I have in mind here now, they are stupid enough to promote reverse osmosis water. So the average consumer says, oh, he says reverse osmosis water is good, so I buy myself $4,000, $5,000 machine, and then I have healthy water. No, this doctor in this area is an idiot. He doesn't know. He doesn't understand. So people, of course, take information, which in many cases is just manipulative or misinformation. Why does nobody want to protect themselves from cell phone electromagnetic radiation? You say all the information is there. Yeah, I'm working on this for 10 years. But how many people have bought my cell phone protection for $99 for 5 years, right? No, because they don't. I have a website designer. She does all my website stuff. She sees all the interviews I give and all the proofs and all the testing, right? My products have been tested by the Beza Institute in Austria, 1,500 pages of scientific tests and studies confirming my claim. You think she has bought a cell phone protection for herself and her husband and her child? No.
Why?
Why? Lethargy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. There's, between our ability to do the thing that we need to do, it's not as if we don't have the information. In the case of this individual, she has a lot.
But we don't represent the society as we sit here.
Well, no, it's a disconnect.
It's a disconnect, and it's we're only as good as the systems that we're putting in. Right, and it's like, okay, perfect example, working in corporate America, you have a company that maybe even works in health or something, but it's like, what's your cafeteria full with? Okay, so here's a good structure. Okay, you have 7 meetings in a day. Each one's 30 minutes long. You have a 5-minute break between those meetings. Between the break, you have to go to the bathroom, clear your head real fast, get ready to snap back into another Zoom meeting, and maybe grab a snack.
And if you go down and you're like, I know that I need to eat a healthy snack, but my cortisol levels are spiked from all these Zoom calls that I'm sitting on. I'm pretty fatigued because I have a, you know, 2 and 4 year old kids, and I have a high pressure job. And then you go into a corporate environment where, hey, it's Pop-Tarts, candy bars, and like 3 apples that are like 13 days old. You're probably going to grab the thing that's easiest, most convenient, and also going to address that stress response in your body. And it's not because I don't have the information that the candy is not good for me. It's that the system that I'm in necessarily doesn't set me up to make the best choice every time. And I think that happens more frequently with people in our society than not. And it's not for weakness on the people's behalf. It's because, like, if we are constantly put in an environment where we have to be high discipline, we're going to fail because discipline is a short fuel. You can use it only so much. John and I were just talking about this. And then it's gone. You can't keep using discipline in every decision. If you make all the decisions very easy, then people can consistently make the right choices. And then every once in a while, they're going to have to use discipline.
But don't you think we're starting to trend towards better systems?
I think we have divergence.
You're shaking your head. But
when we say we, I think it's not a collective. Yeah. I think there are some folks who are in certain positions that are definitely, I think the healthy people are going to get way friggin' healthier. And we're going to have super health.
And you're going to
have. And then I think you're going to have other folks who do not have the same luxury and privilege.
Because of the system that they're surrounded by.
Because of what they're surrounded by and their capacity to make those same discipline choices consistently that are actually going to trend the opposite way.
Well,
you're going to have polarities that are just...
It's kind of like in Brazil. The proportion between the two, I think the positive is going to impact...
That'd be the best case.
System. That's my optimistic...
I love the optimistic.
Yeah, yeah. But it just seems...
I think the middle class is dividing. I think you have... This society's turned into a haves and have-nots. And I don't think that the have-nots have...
The proletariat and the bourgeoisie?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's true. I mean, if you look in Brazil, you either, you know, driving around in a bulletproof Bentley because you live in a mansion or you're living in a favela. Yep. Like, there's really no middle class. I think you're going to have people that are super healthy, that are meeting all these expectations, and you're going to have other people that are, I mean.
Yeah. Well, guys, Norbert, we're going to have you back on. You're a joy. You come well prepared. You know, your subject matter expert.
Yeah, it'd be great to read the book and then go and put all the counter arguments together and really get into the weeds on this.
When this comes out on Sports Illustrated, we're absolutely going to just slay you. I'm joking, man.
Yeah.
I'm joking. It's and you know what I appreciate?
Like, I got a poison pen copywriter.
Your book is about 120 pages. That's the perfect length of a book. If you can't make your argument in about 100 to 120, like everything is always like 250.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like
unnecessarily long.
Yeah. Well, there's this feeling that like it's not a real book unless it's like 180 plus pages. Yeah. I disagree.
And that's what publishers would tell
you. 100 pages, I can read it in like 2 hours.
Well, and there's also guys like John Gordon, who's written like 24 books, a lot of New York Times bestsellers. His books are like 80 to 100 pages on one subject. He gets to the
point. Hyper-targeted.
Exactly.
Here's an outcome.
Well, when I do my presentations, well, with water, right? I'll give you in 1 hour, 1.5 hour, everything you have to know about water, which covers 85% of what you should know and apply. And the rest, 15%, spend your time, read 10, 20 more books to fulfill those. That's not my job. My job is to give you a pretty instant, compact information, what you should know to treat that subject right. Same with... protection, electromagnetic radiation, Wi-Fi, cell phones, and so on, right? Mm-hmm. You can write about all these subjects, 100 books. It's not important. What 80% do I need to know to do it right?
Yeah. Well, selfishly, as we plug off, we just released this. This was just published. Scarlett's Big Shot, Turning Setback into Success, Life Lessons on Resilience, Perseverance, and Optimism. I wrote this with a good, who I consider a mentor. Guy's a total bass-ass tier one operator. And he was the 4th SEAC, which is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs. It's the most senior enlisted guy in the military. Puerto Rico, 14 years old, didn't know a lick of English, moved here, and then rose the ranks in the U.S. I mean, this is the U.S. story, the immigration story, and was the most senior guy. But we are creating this series, the Left of Bang series, to educate or help teachers, parents and caregivers to have conversations about attributes and characteristics and leadership and hopefully help mature or maturate this next generation to be better than we are. So go pick it up on Amazon. We also did it in Spanish because CZ speaks Spanish. I do not, though I had to work on the translation of the entire thing, so hopefully it translated well. We had a Spanish paper look. We're good. So please pick that up on Amazon if you got kids. There's guided discussions in the back for parents, teachers, and the children to talk on each of those attributes. Guys, thanks for joining us. And Norbert, again, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
See you.